You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 15 May, today in 1940, was the opening of the first McDonald's. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, we're going to chat with Pooja Tanna from Perpetua Investment Managers. So today is Jerome Powell's last day as Fed Chair. He's been there 8 years. Let's look back at his stewardship. I wonder if transitory is a big part of his stewardship. We're also going to be chatting with the CEO of Equity. They had some good numbers, strong balance sheet as they pivot away from the UK. And thoughts from me on South Korea. The stock market there has been going absolutely wild on chip demand, but you probably already own some. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Out of favor, Truers overtakes the Fashini Group as missteps wipe out nearly 20 billion rand. The last time the Fashini Group was valued less than its rival was nearly a decade ago. Business Day, Western Cape farmers count cost of devastating floods. They've devastated crops, livestock and infrastructure across the province. This, of course, just as we overtook Spain as the world's biggest exporter of citrus. Morning market, US is green, S&P 0.8 up, NASDAQ 0.7% higher. The East, however, is all red, Sydney down 0.75%, Tokyo just over 1% down, Hong Kong just under 1% weaker, and Tencent off 0.6%. Commodities mostly red, gold futures 4,616, Brent is the only green, $107.04, platinum 2031, palladium 1437, rand 1654, bitcoin 81,000, and top 40 opening call 700 points, 0.6% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money, also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Pooja Tanna from Perpetua Investment Managers. Pooja, always appreciate the early morning time. Today a big day for many. Jerome Powell most notably ends his 8 years as chair of the Federal Reserve. A tough 8 years. I mean, the pandemic in the middle of it. He hasn't had rates below the 2% target since March of 2021. That is 5 years. More than half of his term, we've seen inflation above target. At a top level, and we'll dig into some details, how do you think he overall did for his stint as chair?
Hey, Simon. So yeah, I think I had a bit of a chuckle when you mentioned the word transitory. Yeah. Because, look, I think his legacy is mixed but important, right? There's a couple of moments that define his legacy, but one of the more prominent ones was the pandemic and his response to it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's absolutely going to be remembered for the word transitory when describing yeah. that post-pandemic inflation. So it was no secret that the Fed was way behind the curve, and this ended up being the worst inflation call in history. I mean, however, you have to give him credit when he finally realized what the problem was, he did embark on one of the fastest hiking cycles in decades. Mm-hmm. And he actually engineered a soft landing, you know, with interest rates as high as they were, they engineered a soft landing. We were all expecting a recession and they didn't, you know. So it was, you have to commend him for that. And you also have to take into account that all the other central banks, I mean, it wasn't just the US that got it wrong. It was a bunch yeah. of other central banks that got it wrong. So, I mean, you know, unfortunately, you know, leading one of the largest economies in the world, you are going to be remembered for something like this. And when you say like inflation has been above the central bank's target for the 2% target for 5 straight years, absolutely. So, I mean, that's what he's going to be remembered for. Did he contain inflation? Was it enough? But also, another thing that I feel more important than the inflation debacle is his defense of Fed independence.
Yes, yes.
You know, and we cannot forget that. You know, he's definitely been the stalwart. He's been like, so you cannot take that away from him. He's actually now going to remain at the Fed for a to-be-determined period mm-hmm. in his role as a governor. So his term extends until January 2028. And by doing so, he's actually denying Trump an opportunity to appoint a governor who might be more open to his demands. So, you know, you have to take everything. So I think if you look at his legacy, I think it was a major inflation policy mistake.
Yeah.
But successful disinflation, extraordinary crisis leadership, and then a strong defense of central bank independence.
But I like you. I'd forgotten about soft landings, because in his defense, first pandemic in 100 years, highest inflation in 40. To your point, every central bank of the world over got the transitory story wrong. But he got that soft landing, and no one expected that. I mean, you know, we were guaranteed recession, except it never happened. Yes. I mean, it maybe that's his legacy, although it's buried under layers of other bits and pieces, as is often the case. It's nuanced.
Exactly, 100%. Remember, we were all calling that recession.
Yeah.
There was no ways. Yeah. I mean, the rates were so high. There was no ways he could have injured. No one thought he would be able to. So you have to give him credit. You have to take all these things into account.
And 100-point moves on rates, which I think was the first time since Bill Clinton, which the youngins, the youngins don't know who Bill Clinton is. It's so far ago. So next then, I mean, to your point, it's around now that independence. And to be clear, Trump doesn't want an independent Federal Reserve. He wants one at his beck and call. That is what the new chair who gets the hot seat today is there to do. But I mean, we live in a different world to what we did just 3 months ago with oil prices, inflation coming down the line. And as you point out, Powell potentially staying on for 2 years, not as chair, but as someone who, in a crisis situation, there are going to be a lot of board members who might look to him before they look to the chair. He's still got clout.
Oh, no, for sure. Look, he says he's got no plans to act as a shadow chair or undermine Wash. But you must remember that he's accumulated a lot of allies within the board. So whether he wants it or not, his opinion will always matter. And there's a reason why he's staying there. He's staying there because he's absolutely adamant he's going to defend the independence of the Fed.
Yes. And that is the absolute key point. I mean, hugely important. And we see it locally. I mean, our own MPC, say what you will around them, independence is hugely important. Is there any world in which Trump gets his rate cuts this year? I mean, look, a lot can happen.
No.
I mean, at the end of February, we didn't expect oil over $100, but things change. The rate cuts have just disappeared, surely.
Of course. I mean, listen, now he's got, I cannot see a world of rate cuts at this point in time. Yes, maybe stable rates, and then the market's pricing in 60 basis points of hikes over the coming year. So, I mean, the rate cuts are off the table. But if you look at Wash and what he's now tasked to do, right? Let's just take a step back. We know he was a hawk. Mm-hmm. He supported high interest rates to control inflation. But he has since now aligned with lower interest rates. But he wants to do this in conjunction with balance sheet tightening or quantitative tightening.
Yeah.
So he now wants, but this actually creates a very important policy debate, right? Because now you've got two tools that influence markets very differently. Your rate cuts support your short-end funding conditions and growth, and then it's what Trump wants. But he's not going to get away with it. There's no ways you're getting away with rate cuts at this point in time. I mean, if you look at the PPI, just take a lead on the PPI numbers. Energy was a huge driver. But also services inflation accelerated, which means that the inflation the inflation is broadening again, and there is broadening as the base is actually broadening. So it makes it very likely that CPI punches through that 4% mark in the coming months. How do you cut rates into that? You can't.
Yeah, absolutely can't. I mean, it's the the pottery barn rule. He's broken it. He wanted the rates, but then he should have stayed well away from volatile regions such as Iran. We'll leave it there. Pujatana, Perpetua Investment Managers, always appreciate the early morning insights. That's our poll, LinkedIn and Twitter. Jerome Powell, how do you think he did? I'd forgotten about soft landings, and maybe that is his legacy. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Andrea Tavanatusan. He is CEO Equities Property Fund. Andrea, appreciate the time. Distribution up 5.3%. Your like-for-like rental growth 5.3%. Good numbers in the inflation environment, particularly your like-for-like rental growth. We could probably say, I don't know, a 3-odd% inflation. You're getting a little ahead of that.
Interesting. I mean, I think our rental growth in South Africa was slightly better than that. I stand to be corrected. I think it was 6.7%. Our distribution growth was 5.3%. Mm-hmm. I think your natural growth is probably a little bit lower than that. But, you know, we do have the benefit of these long-dated leases in our portfolio with very, very, very low vacancy. I mean, at 0.2% vacancy, it means that we were able to to distribute through to shareholders. We obviously extremely pleased with the outcome of the South African portfolio in particular, behaved extremely well in the last financial year.
Yeah, absolutely. And
looks like it will do for a couple of years to come still as well.
Yeah, I mean, a 0.2 vacancy is to all intents and purposes full. Your tenants are mostly A grade. I mean, in a sense, a very de-risked portfolio, to your point, a good couple of years locally ahead.
I know we have one institutional shareholder that is quite long on us, and basically he deems us to be a bond proxy, as they say, you know. So it's a bond-like coupon that you get, which grows a little bit every year, and it's, you know, technically should be safe as houses. And I think that is probably a realistic reflection of what our business is. You know, we're never going to give you 20% growth,
yeah.
But we're also not going to fall off a cliff.
Absolutely. And what you are doing, though, is you're doing some speculative developments. Although in the scope of things, they're quite small. I mean, there's one at Jet Park, 17,500 GLL. They are small, but you're seeing demand for them.
Yes. I mean, I find it amazing that the amount of businesses that are making very important decisions in their lives and they don't plan ahead. and obviously we look to fulfill or play a role in that market. And as you said, they're not massive buildings, but they're decent sized buildings nonetheless. And obviously we've got a portfolio of about 1.5 million square meters. So to speculate on sort of 20,000 to 30,000 square meters of space, we believe that's a risk worth taking, kind of thing.
I take your point, absolutely small, but you've got the new logistics facility for Tiger Brands. I mean, even that's around 90,000 square meters. That, of course, goes in tenanted. And you talk around. I mean, these are not the warehouses of our youth. These are state-of-the-art facilities.
That's correct. I think you sum it up, and I think what maybe a lot of people don't understand is the technology and the investments that these organizations make inside the building are normally worth more than the actual building itself. So, you know, the likelihood of whilst they're signing 10-year leases, you know, the likelihood is they'll probably be amortizing that equipment over a sort of 20 to 30 year period. So, we see them as tenants that will be there for the long haul. I suppose the biggest risk to any business is tenant failure. And I suppose no one is immune from that. And we've seen some incredible businesses that everybody thought were the darlings of the world exist no more. So we must never be sort of arrogant in that no one can fail. Things can fail and we're mindful of that. What's quite nice about our business is that, you know, we do conditioning reports on our buildings every year. In fact, twice a year, a mini report at half year and a full report at year end to ensure that our tenants maintain our buildings appropriately. But during that process, obviously, our operations guys get to see what's going on inside those buildings.
Gotcha.
And obviously, if a business is not doing so well, you see very quickly that the warehouse is empty.
I take your point. You walk in and there's nothing there, and you're like, okay, something's not going well here.
Yeah, exactly. You've
got some debt expiring, but you've got a really strong balance sheet. You've got good cash. You've got cash coming from some UK sales. We'll touch on that in a moment. Your LTV 35.1. The balance sheet is looking really, really good.
Hundreds. Yeah, I mean, treasury team done sterling job. Cost of debt low. LTV was 35.1 at period end, but as you said, with the UK sale, that's probably sitting plus minus around 25% now. We've got portfolio of developments coming through the system already contracted of about 160,000 square meters. And just to give you context, the value of that is probably about 1.8 billion. And then we're currently in processes of RFP where we are, in every instance, one of only two bidders left in the process for a further 170,000 square meters, which is a further 2 billion. And ultimately, we probably won't win them all. It's impossible to win them all, but we'd like to think we'll get a fair share of that.
Are you seeing certain sectors, like FMCG, as for an example, where you're seeing a lot more demand, or is it spread sort of across the economy?
Across the board, we're seeing it from retailers, we're seeing it FMCG, we're seeing it third-party logistics, and we're also seeing it Sprayed quite a lot. Also, last mile delivery guys.
Yeah. Let's touch on UK. Whenever we chat, you've been sort of exiting. As you said, there was five more properties announced earlier this week. How much business is left in the UK? What percentage is still in the UK?
Oh, it'll be a single figure now. Okay. Single figure percentage. Yeah. I mean, this was the big one, if you like. So that finally closed on Tuesday, mm-hmm. which it was a process. Obviously very pleased with the outcome. And what it does do now is it frees up the capital to really focus on what we've got here. It also frees up the executive time and I suppose my mind in particular to really driving the new business element of our business. And, the joint ventures with the likes of ShopRite
yeah.
have taught us a few tricks in terms of how to use the REIT joint venture status mm-hmm. to the benefit of the tenant. And we believe that there could be scope for some meaningful sale and lease back opportunities in the next 2 to 3 years. Over and above that, there's a really, really healthy development pipeline coming through. And within that, obviously, we've got a great relationship with ShopRite where we continue to learn every day from them. And also, they continue to just go from strength to strength. And we don't think that their requirement is fully, reached, if you like. We believe that there's a bit more coming from them in the next sort of 2 to 3 years as well. So that will all add to the pie, you know?
Yeah. Every time I speak to Peter Enobrecht, he's telling me there's a lot coming for a long time still, and I would never bet against them. And an LTV in the mid-20s, a lot of capacity there, a lot still to do. We'll leave it there. It's Andrea Tavernatoris, and he's, of course, CEO Equitas Property Fund. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
South Korea, a surprising, perhaps, beneficiary of the AI rollout. About 2 weeks ago, Samsung became a $1 trillion stock. And just yesterday, SK Hynix was almost a $1 trillion stock. This is because of the chips that they make, memory chips. This is not NVIDIA type stuff. This is just good old-fashioned memory chips. And the likes of SK Hynix have just said, you know what, we're not going to produce more. Yeah, we're producing X. Demand is through the roof. Come and pay us the price. So folks have, and we've now got pretty much two South Korean companies in that $1 trillion club. And it is a growing, but still a small club. So the question everyone's been mailing me is, they want to buy South Korea. How do we get in? Is it too late? I don't know if it's too late. On that, I have no idea. But I do know how you can buy it. So there is an ETF, the EWY, which is a New York listed, which is 100% South Korea. You get full exposure. It's running on a TERV of around 0.59, but it is very, very tech heavy. And in fact, you are very much dominated by the Samsung and the SK Hynix. Those are making up pretty much around 50%. There's also been some fixing around the discount. They've been trading at valuations, and the Korean government back in 2024 launched its corporate value up program, trying to sort of get a more interest in their businesses, raise the return on equity, better dividend payout, better disclosure plans, and that's also worked. So it's certainly booming. But here's the thing: if you're owning a diverse global ETF, you probably have some. Now, not the sort of, the world. You want the all world, the MSCI all world, or a total world. Those are all sitting at about 1.5% or 2% exposure to South Korea. That's probably a little higher today. And those are not giant numbers, but it does show the beauty of having these ETFs where, I was unaware. If you'd asked me if I had some South Korea, I would have scratched my head and said, I don't know. Turns out I do, because I've got those global diverse ETFs. And then, of course, any emerging market ETF, they are sitting at somewhere between, 15 and 25%. So you don't need to go all in. You've probably already got some South Korea. That's it for today. Yesterday we were chatting with Kia Nonyano from PrimeXPT. We were talking Anthropic. They want to raise some money at a $900 billion valuation. They haven't even IPO'd yet. We asked you if you thought this was crazy or fair. It was evenly split. A third was saying, yeah, this is crazy. A third was saying, I got no idea. This is just wild. And another third saying it seemed fair on valuations. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast. Just after 7. Thanks to my team, Edit Nobukle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday, structuring a paycheck.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.